This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, we'll use the day as coaches. It's a day that we prep for the next five-day block. So there's themes. We want to make sure that we've got everything scheduled that we want to get to, that our video is prepared for each day. We show video on every day. So it's just kind of a scheduled day. It's a long day.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was Jets head coach Paul Maurice from Thursday's post-practice media scrum. The team taking yesterday off, but they are back on the ice at Bell MTS Iceplex ahead of their trip to Edmonton, which will start tomorrow, as they will be entering into the NHL's return to play bubble tomorrow. I guess tomorrow afternoon they'll probably make their way to Edmonton alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, thrilled to be with you on this Saturday morning, 7 days away from the Jets-Flames Game 1 of the return to play series. I am your host, Drew Mandel. As I mentioned, gentlemen, it is good to see you on this Saturday morning. Lovely to be back in Shea Minuk to broadcast on this fine radio station.
Good to see you guys as well.
Yes, and before we go any further, of course, a belated yesterday happy birthday to you, Mr. Ginsberg, and a happy birthday shout out, so I don't forget, to my father, Sheldon Mandel, as he is celebrating a birthday as well today.
Birthday cousins, Sheldon and I.
Wouldn't you guys have to be on the same day to be birthday cousins?
No, I think it's the day after, or the day before, right?
Did you just make this up on the spot?
Yeah, I just made this up now, but I'm glad that you gave me the belated happy birthday shout out because neither of you texted me to wish me a happy birthday.
I absolutely did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
We literally had a conversation yesterday morning, and I put it out on Twitter. But thank you for forgetting.
You texted me your own happy birthday message, which I found to be odd, and then you described how you were going to celebrate the day, and it got even worse at that point in time, and I'm not even going to bring it up on air.
Well, you asked me about the show. We were texting back and forth about the show, and I had to mention to you that it was my birthday, even though, you know, it's the same day every year. I always remember your guys' birthdays, but I'm obviously joking. Dave M. wished me a shout-out, and Drew did too, and it was a nice low-key birthday, and you know, I'm always happy to share a birthday with, you know, Selkie regular Patrice Bergeron.
And I'm sure he's just as happy to celebrate the birthday with you. There's no question about that. He's up for the Selkie, of course, as you mentioned, and I'm sure just celebrating the same birthday as you is more important than winning the Selkie or winning the Cup or anything along those lines.
Yeah, my joke is that at least one of us is, you know, going to eventually go to the Hall of Fame, right?
That's right. I mean, you know,
you've been to the Hall of Fame.
You'll go there, too, as a visitor, but you certainly won't be inducted in the two. There's no question about that. Let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets. You know, another week of practice has come and gone.
They're hitting the ice actually right now.
They're hitting the ice as we speak right now after taking yesterday off, as I mentioned. I'm struck by how...
And just to give you a heads up, as per our boy Kenny Weeb, Nikolaj Ehlers is not out on the ice. He left yesterday, on Thursday before they left, went and had their scrimmage. He wasn't taking part in the scrimmage, and Kenny's now saying that...
he's unfit to play.
He is. Well, that's all we're going to know is that he is unfit to play, and Gabriel Bourque is in a white jersey, the same color as Patrick Laine and Cody Eakin.
Well, that'll certainly be something, you know, and it's sort of funny you mention that, because prior to this Ehlers news, which, you know, happened on Thursday where he left the ice before the scrimmage, and Paul Maurice said that he, you know, when asked about it, and of course Maurice, you know, isn't allowed to really divulge any information, just said he didn't want him to scrimmage. He practiced, but he didn't scrimmage.
Right.
You know, this is the first newsworthy, really, aspect of Jets training camp 2.0 so far. I mean, Anthony Boteto returned to practice, and he had been out. He came out and admitted that he had COVID, and he's been sort of quarantining for, what is it, I think 29 days he was quarantining for, and then he's rejoined practice. And prior to this Ehlers issue, whatever it is, and we don't yet know what it is, and who knows if we will know what it is, it's been just copacetic for the Jets training camp. It's been no waves. There hasn't been anything really the least bit exciting until right now, where they're trying to get to Edmonton, you know, healthy, and all of a sudden it looks like something is ailing Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, we have no idea, and we're not going to speculate because there's a good chance that, you know, it's something minor. And, you know, as you mentioned off the top of the show, I mean, we've got, you know, a week to go here. So if it is something minor, he's got quite a bit of time here, you know, to heal up whatever that wound is, right? But, I mean, when you're talking about a top six winger, you know, one of the best players on the Jets, you know, some people believe he is the best forward on the Jets, at least in terms of skill. I mean, that's obviously newsworthy, but, you know, I agree, Drew, when you're talking about, you know, the last, you know, what are we in, day 12 here, guys, of training camp, day 12 or day 13 of training camp, whatever it is, I mean, yeah, it has been, you know, as you mentioned last week, Drew, it's been, you know, pretty quiet, pretty stable. And, you know, that's a good thing for the Winnipeg Jets when you consider, you know, all the injuries they had and, you know, everything that was going on, you know, with the team, around the team, you know, namely, you know, Dustin Byfuglien and, you know, whether or not he was going to return. And then obviously, you know, we found out in February he wasn't, but, you know, I think, you know, for the Jets, when you don't have that much to talk about, they're probably happy with that, right? Because Paul Maurice, the coaching staff, they can just focus on getting the team ready to head off to Edmonton, like you said, tomorrow. So hopefully it's nothing major, because they're going to need Ehlers. I mean, in the playoffs, you're going to need every single one of your big guns. You're going to need every single one of your players on the ice, and he's a key part of the Jets offense. So, like you said, we'll have to wait and see what it is. There's no reason to speculate, but
I have to believe that it's minor, and I'll tell you why I have to believe that it's minor, is that I don't
Bork it.
That's right. There's no possibility that Gabriel Bork is playing in your top six.
Right.
So if it was something, you know, seriously concerning, or the possibility of him missing game time, that then you would see Jack Roslovic up there, you'd see Jansen Harkins up there, or you'd see, you know, Matthew Perreault up there. Gabriel Bork's not going to be playing in the Jets' top six. So I'm sure that the Jets are being extra precautionary, because there's no reason to not be. There's no reason to push a guy, you know, with, you know, 7 days to go until the games actually matter. You know, who knows, does this linger for a couple days? It's probably, you know, when you haven't, you know, seriously been skating for a number of months, it's natural to, at some point in time, to feel a pull or to feel a twinge at some point after you're back on the ice for a while. So
is twinge a word?
Oh, yeah, twinge is a word.
Okay.
I mean, you've twinged things. There's no question that you've twinged the hamstring or you've
twinged. I'll remember that next time I play Scrabble.
When was the last time you played Scrabble?
Recently.
Really?
I like to play Scrabble.
I had like a date. When was the last date?
I don't have the exact date, but it was within the last year.
Really?
Yeah, at the cottage.
Well, look at you.
Yeah, Naomi and I play a little Scrabble every once in a while.
Not cribbage? I'm a cribbage cottage guy.
No, I'm not a big cribbage guy. I like Balder Dash.
Well, Balder Dash is
good. Yeah. Dave, Scattergories.
Cribbage? Scrabble?
I like all of them. Not a Scrabble.
Mousetrap.
No.
Mousetrap. Mousetrap. What are you, 6 years old?
Really enjoy a good game of X's and O's.
Okay, well, there you go, Dave. That's at your level there, Dave.
I hate cat games. Is that what they call a tie? Isn't it a cat game? Cats game?
Yeah, when you can't win in X's and O's, that is what it's called. In any event, I mean.
Do you prefer the X or the O, Dave?
Good question. I like the X.
Dave's an X guy, okay. With Dave, like the triple X more than anything, I suspect. But when you're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers...
You're talking about the movie with Vin Diesel?
I haven't seen that one, but I'll let you give a synopsis if you want. But when you're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, his importance to this Jets team entering the playoffs. And we're going to talk about more about him next segment, because we know the numbers for Nikolaj Ehlers in the playoffs aren't good. They're not good enough for a guy.
He has no goals.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He's got 7 points in, 21 playoff games. So you know that his numbers need to be better, and Paul Maurice will speak about it when we play the clip coming back from the next break, about how he thinks that Nikolaj Ehlers is ready for a breakout in the playoffs. So this isn't a great thing, obviously, him not being in the lineup or not being on the ice for practice right now, but it is something that you have to expect it to be minor more than anything serious, Dave.
Yeah, I should also mention that Jansen Harkins also was listed to be with this group and isn't skating.
So two things where, you know, at least your eyebrows are a little bit raised.
To your point, for the first time, really, this whole training camp, which, again, big and boring, that's fine. You know, like, that's exactly what you want. Get to Edmonton with relatively, you know, unscathed, and obviously, you know, Ehlers wouldn't leave you unscathed. But for the most part right now, you've been fairly good. And that could just be, you know, again, something minor, because to Ezzy's point, these guys haven't really had to do anything like this for months. So now it's somewhat expected. We see it in regular training camps all the time,
sure,
where a guy won't be available for a day or two because of something that happens during a skate. So it's not unexpected that this would happen, but, you know, it's from a Jets perspective, the fact that it's just happening now, you know, ideally, to Ezzy's point, it doesn't drag on for too long. But at the end of the day, you know, again, to be able to get to Sunday with with just really this being the first time we're really talking about anything of significance is a pretty good thing.
Let me ask you guys this. So the Jets obviously have their first exhibition game or their only exhibition game on Thursday night against the Vancouver Canucks, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. All the games, all the Jets playoff games available live on TSN Radio 1290.
It's Wednesday, isn't it?
Is it Wednesday?
I think it's the 29th.
29th, sorry. Yeah. My days of the week are all confused. That's okay. And everything else. But Wednesday. So, you know, how do you think the Jets should approach that exhibition game? Is, you know, I asked Paul Maurice that last week, you know, about his mindset entering
Name
that.
Drop.
His or Drew's?
I don't think Paul Maurice is dropping my name anywhere. But, you know, I was sort of surprised that, you know, he said that they were going to take it, you know, pretty seriously. You know, and they're going to take it as if it was almost, you know, a real game prior to the start of the playoffs.
How seriously can you really take it? Like, I think it's going to be more important than an exhibition game in late September or early October. But really, how seriously can you take it? You don't want a guy to get injured.
That's my
game doesn't mean anything. But you obviously, you know, want your guys to be skating well. And that's all I think coaches are looking for in this game, right? Like, they want to see, okay, my top line's going. You know, maybe my third line is looking good. Oh, yeah, my top D pair is looking good. Or this guy who maybe is coming back from a long injury, right? Like, to me, like a guy like Michael Kempney, who hasn't played all year for the Washington Capitals, In an exhibition game, if you're Todd Reirden, you really want to see how Michael Kempney is looking in an exhibition game. You know what I mean? So I don't think that you can really place that much importance in it. It's much more important, you know, I think for the coaches and players just to have one game before the play-in series, right? But how much stock can you really put into one game? That's all I'm saying.
Well, and I think to your point is that from what Paul Maurice said, guys aren't losing their jobs based on an exhibition game. The fact is, I think these guys are, the expectation I would have opportunity to bang and crash.
Yeah.
And score some goals. Yep. And really see what the ice is like. And, you know, yeah, it's obviously not going to be a game, you know, what he, in his response to Drew, he said that, you know, look, most guys want to take off that last exhibition game, right? But instead, in this instance, guys want to play because, A, you need that opportunity to feel like you're not going to go out there. Patrick Laine might bump Nikolaj Ehlers. He's not going to crush Nikolaj Ehlers into the boards. You know,
in a scrimmage.
In a scrimmage, I'm saying. Or in any sort of battle drills. These guys aren't going to try to kill their teammates. Whereas, look, they're not going to go out and try and kill the Vancouver Canucks, but both teams are going to be trying to hit each other. They're going to feel, they want to feel like what it's like to be somewhat normal in a game setting. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really bizarre game next Wednesday. But I think you still need to kind of use it to kind of ramp it up because, I mean, again, you've only got a few days.
But how much are you going to ramp it? So, I mean, it almost seems like you're going to play that game at half speed or three-quarter speed for fear of injury right before the playoffs.
Right.
So I just don't know if I see the benefit to it necessarily because you're not going to go at full speed. I mean, it's almost like they'd be better off playing a full, you know, a half a game at full speed than a full game at half speed or a full game at three-quarter speed. I don't think that they should treat it as a 60-minute game because these guys don't need a whole, I think, a 60-minute sort of half-intensity game, but they need maybe a 30-minute full-intensity game. And
guys,
that's the problem with it.
They haven't played since mid-March. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just want to be, these guys, the players just want to be out on the ice. That's all that they care about. I agree with you, Drew. I you're not really going to care at all. Nobody's going to care about the score of any of these games, but they just want game action. Like Dave said, they want to bump into some guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to rip some slappers. Like, they want to get some power play opportunities. This is just a glorified scrimmage. Really, if you think about it. I mean, it doesn't have any impact on anything. I mean, like, if, you know, Andrew Kopp doesn't play well, he's still going to be the winger on the third line. Mm-hmm. Adam Lowry's still got that third line center role locked down, right? Like, I don't think Paul Maurice is going to really be doing hard evaluations in that game. I mean, he is going to be doing evaluations with the coaching staff. But I think when you look at it from the macro level, they've been watching these guys every move in training camp, right? So you have 11 or 12 days of training camp and one exhibition game. What are you going to put more stock into? You're going to put more stock into the entirety of the training camp.
Right.
Right? So I think, you know, that exhibition game, you know, again, it's going to be great because we haven't seen any hockey in, you know, 4+ months. And, you know, like we said, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're a baseball player or you're a football player. These guys just want to get out there and compete. So I think they're probably all happy that they're going to at least get the one game in before the play-in series, so they're not all just cold, because those exhibition games probably aren't going to be very pretty.
No, they won't be, because nobody cares about them. The players don't care about them. They don't, not that they don't care about them, but they know the result is secondary to maybe just getting a feel for it. But that's right. Why, I mean, a 60-minute exhibition game 2 days before you're about to start the playoffs, it leaves me with a sense of nervousness. And I know that you can never plan for everything, and you always have to, you know, you could get injured in the first period of the first shift in game one against the Flames, and it's the same difference. But to me, boy, oh boy, that game against Vancouver, you know, if there's one player on the ice who decides that they want to be, you know, a hero for the Canucks, and they drill a Jets player who might not necessarily have his head on the swivel like he would during a playoff game, mm-hmm. boy, that exhibition game is going to look a lot more serious than they expected it to.
Well, and it's funny, because, you know, what I asked Kristen Anderson last week, I said, you know, how does the Battle of Alberta be played at like a half speed? How do the Calgary and Edmonton, two teams that don't generally like each other, just pretend like, okay, this is just one exhibition game, it's a little tune-up?
And Dave, you know, these guys are pros, right? Like, these guys know when to ramp it up, and they know, you know, the difference between an exhibition game and when the games actually matter, right? So, yes, is there the risk of injury? It's a good point you bring up, Drew. I mean, you don't want, especially one of your top guys to get injured, but I think that these guys know, you know, what speed they need to be at, and you know, I don't think it'll be an issue. I think really it's just, you know, something that they had to do. They had to give teams, they had to give players, you know, at least an exhibition game before the real games start get going.
And the real games, of course, will start next Saturday, the exhibition game Wednesday night, 9:30 p.m. is the puck drop. Complete coverage all day long, of course, on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. When we come back, we discuss Nikolaj Ehlers. Is this the year that he's going to have his playoff breakout? Assuming,
yes,
of course, that he is healthy enough to go.
He's going to rip it up. Hat trick first game.
Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Well, Nick Ehlers, at times this year, played a style of hockey that he will score in the playoffs with. And that was addressed with him. You know, that's the grindy. We're doing our video today on some forechecking stuff, and there's two or three clips in that of Nicky finishing checks and being hard on plays. So that's all part of the growth of a player, right?
Jets head coach Paul Maurice speaking about Nikolaj Ehlers, of course, prior to Ehlers leaving the scrimmage on Thursday, not practicing this morning on Saturday. But of course, Paul Maurice making with the bold proclamation that Nikolaj Ehlers' game is ready to score come playoff time, a change obviously from his previous success in the playoffs with 21 games played and 0 goals scored. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Here you go, Ezzy. Happy birthday from Dave and I. Some licorice, which I believe all dentists recommend that you eat prior to any dental appointment. Or they actually, a whole bag of licorice there will keep a dentist well-served as your teeth rot out of your mouth.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Drew. I also brought some wine gums,
yes,
and some cookies, so
yes,
we're all going to have rotting teeth here by the end of the show.
It's quite the breakfast buffet that we've got going on this Saturday morning.
But second week in a row that Dave M. has not put out one single thing.
I apparently would kill the guy to put out a dainty. You bake, don't you?
Not
bake?
Not even like water, Dave. Like, it's 100 degrees outside Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
First of all, you guys last week complained my house was too cold.
The temperature's better today.
We're not going to be complaining today.
I turned it up a little bit for you guys because I was like, ugh, I don't
like it. Is so cold out. Pardon me. It is so hot. Sorry, let me get it right here.
Try it again.
It's so hot out that you.
It's like a start of a joke.
You can't help but have like back sweat within like 10 minutes, at least for me.
Like when Drew had it in Philadelphia in 2014?
It was hot.
Oh, you had some bad back sweat going on.
I was a little bigger.
Because we did the Rocky Walk.
I was a little bigger, and it was a little humid, and that's not a good combination.
Yeah, the pit stains were pretty good.
It's true. Well, later on, if it gets a little warm in here, I'm just going to go take a dip in Dave's pond in the backyard. You know, just bathe myself off in there.
It's nice, cool temp in that pond, too.
Exactly. It looks lovely in there. Anyways, Paul Maurice, you heard his comments there about Nikolai Ehlers, and of course...
Segue there, Drew.
Thank you. Let's assume that Ehlers is healthy come next Saturday, game one against the Flames.
Yep.
Is his game ready to take that next step and be playoff effective? Because it hasn't been so far, and it's certainly a storyline entering the return to play against the Calgary Flames.
Yeah,
the Jets need Ehlers to, you know, to be a dominant winger that we saw at times, probably more so this year than any other year before, where he was really effective and driving the play.
Well, first off, was he not dealing with something last year against the Blues? Like, to me, it seemed like he was dealing with something, you know, injury-wise. But when you go back, you know, to the run against the Vegas Golden Knights when they went on that run to the Western Conference Final.
15 games, zero goals.
No, but he did have 7 assists, first of all. And it's not like Ehlers was bad. And, you know, going back to what we talked about last segment, I will hear an argument... You know, and I would probably, you know, make that argument that Ehlers is the most skilled Jet forward, especially when you're talking about his combination of speed and hands and shot. Like, this is a guy that you could have argued, you know, could have gone higher in that 2014 draft. Like, he was on pace for a career year. We can't forget that, guys. Like, he was on pace for, you know, 30 goals or just under 30 goals and probably around, you know, 65 to 70 points, you know, before the season was cut short with 11 games remaining, right? So... I mean, this is a guy who is playing at a very high level this past season. Now, I don't have one or two reasons why he still has yet to score a goal in, you know, 20 or 21 playoff games. I do remember, though, he was a very good player a couple of years ago when the Jets did go on that run. So, you know, was it a combination of, you know, not getting some puck luck? I mean, I realize that, you know, not everyone wants to talk about that, but I mean, he did miss a few games, you know, if I'm not mistaken, on that run, but... You know, I'm not worried about Ehlers at all. I think when you see those zeros, it stands out because, you know, this is a guy who, you know, has scored, you know, 25-plus goals, you know, multiple times. But I think he's going to be fine. I have no concerns. I mean, obviously, we don't know how serious the injury is. We believe it's very minor, and he should be okay to certainly play on August 1st in Game 1 versus Calgary and most likely in the exhibition game against Vancouver. But I don't think if it was something to be concerned about... I think, you know, it would have carried over, you know, into the regular season. Like, Nikolai Ehlers didn't struggle for any extended period of time during the regular season based on not having a good playoff series against the Blues last year. And certainly, you can make an argument, like, Jack Roslovic hasn't scored a goal in any, I think he's played, what, 15 playoff games now, if I'm not mistaken. So Jack Roslovic is a guy, I think, who there's some pressure on him, Dave. So, I mean, it's not just Ehlers. I mean, Roslovic is a guy, you know, he's on the third line, obviously, and in less of a scoring role. Mm-hmm. But you obviously, you know, if you're Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, you want that third line chipping in as well. So Roslovic is another guy, you know, he's got to prove himself and, you know, hopefully, you know, pop that cherry and, you know, get his first playoff goal. But I'm not worried at all. That might just be me. I think Ehlers is going to be fine. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to score some goals against the Flames.
Do you agree with Paul Maurice's assessment, Dave, that Ehlers' game has changed for the better and maybe more? It's a game that translates more to the bump and grind and the dirty areas per se of a playoff hockey game.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy who now has, you know, 5 NHL seasons under his belt, and he's got, you know, 2 playoff runs with the Jets. Obviously, the last year wasn't a run, but it was a series.
Yeah,
and so it's not as if he doesn't have, you know, the chops to know what is expected, how the game ramps up in the playoffs. And to Ezzie's point, to open the segment, he's one of your most talented forwards. So, you know, are you concerned that he doesn't have a goal? Okay, sure. But, I mean, at the end of the day, do you think he's going to do it? I absolutely do. I think that he's not a player who you should be concerned about. I think, you know, he's a driver. We saw it. We see his possession numbers are, you know, through the roof. And again, he's not a guy who's afraid to mix it up. Now, is he going to be, you know, going into all the dirty areas? No, but again, especially if they've got Cody Eakin, that's what his role is, right? Cody Eakin's going to be the guy who will go into those dirty areas and get those pucks for Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. But again, I don't think Nikolaj Ehlers will necessarily shy away from that.
Yeah, we certainly saw more of an edge to his game this year than ever before.
I think he's playing with that. I don't want to say a chip on his shoulder because I don't think it's that, but I think he's playing with more, maybe edge is the right word. I think he's playing with more edge this season than we saw previously. So you add edge to a guy who's got, you know, unbelievable skill, and that can only translate to, in my opinion, to something good for the Winnipeg Jets.
Sure. I think the confidence argument is certainly something there that the last couple of years, or the first two playoff runs that Ehlers was on, he may not have had the confidence to take over when he needed to. And he had the skill set, but when you're a younger player, it always takes a little bit of time to really develop that confidence where you can say, I'm going to beat whoever's up against me. Mm-hmm. And Ehlers this year certainly seemed to grow in the regular season. He seemed to grow when it came to being on the ice and to being more of a dominant force than past seasons.
Sure,
but
go back to 2018, right? When the Jets went on that run, like he was on that line with Patrick Laine and Paul Stastny.
Sure.
Right? So like, and that line
but
was...
But Stastny was the driver of that line.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. And you know, Patrick Laine was obviously excellent as well. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that, you know, that was Ehlers' first playoff experience. But, you know, based on my memory, and we were at those games, you know, in Winnipeg and watching all the other games, like, it's not like Ehlers was a passenger on that line. Like, Ehlers was flying out there, and he had scoring chances. It seemed like, you know, he just had a little bit of trouble finishing, which for a guy that, like we mentioned, you know, multiple 20-plus goal scorer, you know, you're not used to seeing. And you're right. I mean, he's still young at 24 years old, but I just think it's kind of one of those almost unexplainable things where you have, you know, one of the Jets' top players who just hasn't been able to, you know, put it all together and finish come playoff time. And like I said, I wouldn't say that he's played poorly. I would actually say he's played well. The results just haven't come. So again, you know, unfortunately, Drew, I'm not giving you, you know, very definitive answers here.
There is no definitive because, of course, we're forecasting what a player might do a week from now.
And, you know, I'm personally biased. I'm a big fan of Nikolaj Ehlers. Like, I think, you know, the skill set is incredible. And sometimes, Dave, he almost gets overlooked with Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, the season Kyle Connor was having, 38 goals. It's almost like Ehlers is, you know, it's almost like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Gretzky, Messier, and Curry, you know, and there also happened to be a guy named Glenn Anderson, who is a pretty good player, right? So it's almost like you have that situation here in Winnipeg where, you know, I think sometimes we take for granted, at least, you know, I don't, but some people, I think, you know, take for granted how skilled of a player Ehlers is. So, again, I think he's going to be fine, and, you know, I think he is going to contribute this year.
42 shots on goal in his 21 playoff games. I mean, a shooting percentage of zero is hard to believe, and it's not obviously going to continue. Yeah. So you expect just by virtue of having, you know, more chances, he's going to get that goal.
Yeah.
But I think that shots on goal number is going to be interesting to keep an eye on when he's been averaging, you know, he's averaging two a game.
Right.
And I think the Jets and Ehlers himself would like to see that
number
rise.
Oh, yeah, they want him to shoot the puck. And he's not a guy like Laine. Right, Dave? Like, Laine is a guy that, you know, sometimes has 5, 6, 7 shots a game.
Mm-hmm.
Ehlers isn't, you know, high volume like that.
Right.
But I'm sure the coaching staff, you know, first off, everyone's aware of it. You don't think Nick Ehlers is aware of it? You don't think that he wants to score his first playoff goal? So, again, based on his track record of excellence, I think he's going to be just fine. And, you know, I don't think anybody should be shocked if he scores his first playoff goal this year.
I think if he doesn't score his first playoff goal, that would be more shocking.
Yep.
But the Jets need him to contribute. They need him to be the driver that he was so often on that line with Laine.
And we've talked about
Cody Eakin's not going to drive that line.
No, Cody Eakin's not a driver. And we talked about it, you know, with, you know, Mike Kelly of the Point Hockey, you know, talking about zone entries, right? Mm-hmm. Like Nick Ehlers,
he's a zone entry machine.
Right? So he's a play driver. So you're right. I mean, he's probably, you know, if he's not one of the most important players on the Jets, he's crucial. I mean, he really is. The Connor Scheifele Wheeler line, you know what you're going to get from that line. They're good almost every single game. Do they have the odd bad game? Maybe. But that Ehlers Eakin line A line, if the Jets are going to go far, that's going to be a key line because you go back. And we've talked about this many times before. You go back to that series against Nashville, probably the best ever Jets playoff series, I would say. Paul Stastny was the key to that series, right? So And he was on the second line. So that second line of Eakin, Lion A, Ehlers is going to be huge if the Jets are going to go far.
No question. When we come back, we're going to look at the Jets' defense. Anthony Boteto returns to practice, the impact of his return, and much more talk about the depth players on the Jets' defense. You know the top six. How do you rank all the other defensemen that are still in training camp? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We missed him here in camp because it's unusual, and that it's just practices, right? I mean, we're scrimmaging, but it's not real. And you need those guys on your tougher day. It was a little bit of a grinder here today, and kind of five straight days on the ice. So having him around made for a few laughs. It was good.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the importance of getting Anthony Boteto back onto the practice ice. That happened earlier in the week after Boteto announced that he had COVID. He's the first, I guess, Jets player to announce that he had the illness or the ailment. I don't even know what you officially call it.
Virus.
Thank you, David. And he has recovered, of course, so that's obviously the good news. And he was out of quarantine after spending 29 days off the ice, and the Jets and the coaching staff and the whole team was happy to have him back on the practice ice earlier this week.
Every time I hear Anthony Boteto speak, like, it just puts a smile on my face. Like, I just love that accent. He's just got one of the best accents out there. And, you know, good on him for, you know, coming out and being so honest, right? Like, and, you know, he's only been with the Jets for a very short time.
Yeah, this season.
But he's only, he's been so honest and you know, he's just a positive influence on this team. And obviously, you know, he probably would admit that, you know, he played more games than he thought he would, you know, based on the turnover with the Jets and, you know, some of the injuries and all that. But, you know, just I thought that was, you know, really impressive, because it must have been a very tough situation, because, you know, you mentioned, I mean, he was in quarantine for a month, basically. And, you know, the speculation started to ramp up, you know, after he missed, you know, 3 days of training camp, 4 days, 5 days, and then he just returned, you know, what was it, 3 days ago, right? So, you know, it was just, you know, I thought, you know, something that, you know, it takes a big man to, you know, come out with that, because I think there are players out there that probably just want to keep it private.
Which they're totally entitled to, but there is no stigma yeah. attached to it. It's only the NHL that seems to be making it yeah. be that there's a stigma for that you get COVID. I mean, it's a global pandemic.
Yeah.
It's only the NHL that's dramatizing it and everything else. If they had said he's got COVID, you say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope, you know, he recovers and you move on.
It's, well, the NHLPA wanted it, right? Like,
yeah.
the players voted on wanting this, but I think the only issue... We talked about this last week with Michael Tracos, right? Like, he wrote about it for Post Media. The only issue is that any time a guy is injured now, sure. you suspect COVID, right? So it's almost like a situation where, you know, maybe they should have put something in there and just kept the upper body, lower body thing, because the speculation, it's going to be too much. Like, what happens, guys, once we get into the conference finals and, you know, a star player goes down? Like, what happens if, you know, David Pastrnak goes down?
Well, he's not. Pastrnak's currently down, and he's tested negative.
Bad example.
Right, I know what you're saying.
Let's say, you know, Mark Stone on the Vegas Golden Knights goes down, but nobody can really see a point in the previous game where it looked like he got injured. Well, people are going to start speculating, well, is it COVID-19 related? Like, it's going to get pretty ridiculous. It's already been pretty ridiculous.
Well, I guess ultimately, though, I couple things. First of all, I thought Boteto was very forthright, and I agree with you 100% true. That was the word I was going to use, was stigma.
Yeah.
There's no stigma attached. Like, who cares? It's not like...
Millions of people have
and that's what
contracted
he said.
The virus.
He goes, 2.5 million people have had this, right? Or whatever the number is. So he's like, you know, but he got in the end of June when he was in Nashville in his off-season home, said he only had shortness of breath. He actually couldn't believe he had it for the first 5 days because he just felt fine. And then he said he started to feel, you know, some symptoms. But at the end of the day, like, there is no stigma. And you know, again... You know, the truth is, coaching staffs aren't very honest about injuries anyways.
Sure.
So, regardless of whether a guy went out, unless you can see, hey, he blocked the shot, it's obviously his foot.
Well,
to Ezzy's point, unless you see something yeah. discernible in the game, the reality is, we generally won't know anyway. So, if a guy, for example, Nikolaj Ehlers, nobody knows why he left. So, you know, likely, of course, we know it's not code related because he was on the ice, and so you know, it's reasonable. A reasonable person would assume that has something to do with what happened to him on the ice, that's why he came off.
He felt something.
Right.
Not all of a sudden he was on the ice and his test came back positive all of a sudden.
So the point is that for someone like Ehlers, you don't need to speculate in that realm. Other guys, if, for example, had Ehlers not taken the skate and then missed today's skate, that's when you start to go, okay, is it quite, but at the end, again, I'm in the camp of like, do I really care? Do I really care if it's an upper body injury, lower body injury, or COVID-19? Because the truth is, teams don't tell us anyways.
Yeah, you don't know exactly what it is with upper body or lower body. The thing I was thinking too, guys, is, you know, with the NHL, you know, establishing this injury disclosure policy, right? And then now you've had how many players? I want to say at least 5 or 6 players, you know, that have come out and admitted they had COVID-19,
like
right?
Yeah,
Caleb Jones was one.
Jace Horlock.
Jace Horlock talked about it.
Austin Paquetto, Austin Matthews.
Yeah, Austin Matthews.
And what's his name? Xavier Ouellette in Montreal, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I didn't know about him, Dave, but yeah, I'll take your word for it. But so we're talking about, you know, let's say 6 players, right?
Yeah.
So you wonder how many players amongst the, you know, 750 plus players in the NHL, obviously, you know, the players that, you know, weren't part of this return to play probably wouldn't care as much, even though they would, I assume, have a vote. You wonder, you know, how many players were vocal about, you know, not wanting positive COVID-19 cases disclosed, right? You heard earlier this week, Johnny Toews, you know, obviously one of the best players in the league, you know, didn't vote for
he actually denied that. So that was reported by Elliot Friedman that Toews voted against it. And then Toews came out and denied that he voted against, as the NHLPA rep for the Blackhawks. He denied it. He said, I actually did vote for it. So it sounds like, there was some bad information there.
Well, but the point
is,
there 21% of players didn't vote for the CBA extension, and the return to play, right? So, I mean, that's not a big majority, but that's enough players. Like, what are we talking about? We're talking about over 100 players. So you wonder, you know, how many players were vocal in saying that, no, let's just disclose it. And obviously certain players, you know, have more power. It's political, right? When you're talking about the NHLPA, but just kind of interesting. But it is nice, you know, that Anthony Botito did come out with it because, you know, I think people do want to hear that. And, you know, I think there is some sympathy for him and it's, you know, just nice that he's, you know, back and healthy and, you know, he's going to be able to go if he's needed. He's obviously not a top 6 defenseman for this team, but, you know, he's a 7-8 defenseman.
Well, let me ask you guys this then. You know, how do you rank the extra defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, Sammy Niku's got to be 7.
Well, but I don't think
he's not.
Lucas Spies is 7.
Well, but you're asking for our.
I'm asking for your ranking.
Well, yeah.
How would you rank it?
Well, I mean, are you putting Lucas Spies over Sammy Niku, Drew?
I'm not personally, but I think Paul Maurice is.
Well, right, and obviously, you know, he knows a lot more than I do. But I mean, if you're talking about skill, I'm going to take Sammy Niku all day long. And you know, to me, it was a really tough season for Sammy Niku. Dave knows this, and you know, Niku was, you know, a hot topic at the beginning of the season, right, Dave? And then, you know, he's kind of, you know, yo-yoing back and forth,
right,
you know, between the AHL and the NHL, and he had the injuries and all that. And I know you know this, Dave. If Sammy Niku is, you know, healthier and, you know, playing more games for the Moose, that probably results in more wins because he is obviously, you know, would be one of the most skilled defensemen in the league, right?
Former AHL defenseman of the year.
So, I mean, Niku is a guy that I put at number 7, but I agree. You know, when you're talking about the playoffs and you're talking about the Jets defense, I mean, we know this is not as skilled or physical, you know, as a group certainly, you know, that went on the long run in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, is Lucas Sabiza the next man up? Like, is he on deck if the Jets have an injury? Yeah, it's possible, you know, based on the games he played. And the thing with Sabiza is he does offer that physical element, right? So, you know, a Tucker Poolman, you know, is arguably the Jets, you know, most physical defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're looking for a guy maybe to go in on that third pair, you know, if it's, you know, replacing Nathan Beaulieu or so, yeah, I guess it would be Sabiza 7, maybe you put Niku 8 and, you know, maybe Boteto 9. I don't really know, but you know, certainly, you know, it's unfortunate that Niku isn't able to crack that top 6 because I think you can make an argument he should be in there.
Yeah, and I think to your point, as you're right. I think if we looked at it from a skill perspective, Niku's at least, you know, could be top 6, or he's at least your 7th guy. But clearly, based on what we've seen from Paul Maurice, you know, it's Lucas Spies because he's been the seventh defenseman, for the entirety of training camp with Group 1.
Right.
So obviously, from Paul Maurice's perspective, you know, it's Lucas Sabiza if one of his top six go down, in theory, but obviously it's, you know, situational. And, you know, then he's got these, I imagine, see, it's funny, we would think that probably Niku would be your next guy based on what's happened to Potato and the fact that he just started training camp,
right,
you know, a few days ago. So, and then really, Niku's, in Paul Maurice's eyes, probably your ninth guy, and Dahlstrom would be your tenth. And again, my expectation is probably Nogé and Stanley won't make that 31 roster for
so
the
you,
Jets.
So you mentioned that, of course. Right now there's 33 players in Jets camp. They have to bring that number down to 31 before they head to Edmonton tomorrow. So we will hear about you know, some cuts over the next you know, 24 or 36 hours, and we'll find out who those defensemen are or who the forwards are that don't end up going to Edmonton. When we come back, we'll try and get an update from Jets training camp 2.0. The players are on the ice. We'll see what's happening there. We'll talk about the importance of the Jets special teams, the penalty kill, the tale of two, the Jekyll and Hyde Winnipeg Jets penalty kill this year. Much more to come. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us from Edmonton at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Clearly, we struggled with it early, and it was a big problem for us, and it became a strength for us in the end. We got a little healthier. You add DeMello, then you add Eakin, and then Lowry comes back. And Andrew Kopp was injured. I mean, those are really, really important people for us. We did not have a lot of depth in the penalty-killing role with the injuries that we had and the people that we lost. So we added depth, and then we got healthy.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the penalty kill. We remember back in October, November, December, the penalty kill was historically bad. Well, it was that much better come January, February, and March. It was a top five penalty kill in the sort of 2020 portion of the Winnipeg Jets season after it ended 2019 in a very rough spot. Saturday morning, welcome back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. That's a long time. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
We should give a big shout-out to Aaron Bernstein because we weren't on air. We were doing the Zoomcast, but he recently got engaged.
That's true.
3 weeks ago. So shout-out to Aaron and Alana.
Yes, congratulations.
They got engaged, and yeah, it's awesome news.
Yes, we won't be invited to the wedding, but that's fine. We're not allowed out in any sort of formal situations.
Serving Illegal Curve sandwiches at the wedding, Drew.
Yeah, they're actually bringing them to our house so that we don't go to the wedding. That's how that's going to work. But yes, I echo your thoughts there. Congratulations to them both on their upcoming nuptials. Quick update from Winnipeg Jets training camp. We were talking about the absence of Nikolaj Ehlers earlier on. He did come out briefly with group two to skate with that group. He is not scrimmaging. It looks like the Jets are going to scrimmage right now at Bell MTS Iceplex. So Ehlers not scrimmaging, did come out for a skate, so which affirms our initial belief that whatever is ailing him is a minor concern. No Jansen Harkins, though, at all. So there's no sign of Jansen Harkins at all during practice today for the Winnipeg Jets. Not a part of the practice and then not part of the scrimmage. So something to keep an eye on there, where Harkins right now, 13th, maybe 14th forward for the Jets, depending
on... He's definitely not 13th, because Bork has been 13th.
Well, again, but that's... I do believe that...
Well, I know what you're saying. If it's a top six guy, they're not putting Bork there, they'd put Harkins.
Or they
move Roslovic and put Harkins to that third line. Yeah, that's fair.
Exactly. So anyways, how about 13A and 13B?
Sure.
Will you agree with that?
Split squad.
There you go. Thank you very much, Dave Minuk. Very, very tough audience here, I got to say.
Today's number of the day is 13.
There you go. Anyways, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets penalty kill, because... You know, it really was a tale of two situations, a tale of two scenarios for that Jets power penalty kill this year. From January 1st until the NHL took its break, fourth best in the NHL, 85.5% success rate in killing penalties. That's in 31 games played. They actually started taking a few more minor penalties, 10th in the NHL in minor penalties. Then you remember back from the start of the season to December 31st, the worst penalty kill in the NHL. 71.4% success rate, which means a team scored basically 30% of the time against the Jets penalty kill. and that's in 40 games, but the Jets took the fewest minor penalties in the league in that time period. Which Jets penalty kill do you think you're going to see come the playoffs against Calgary? And how important is it that the Jets penalty kill, if they are able to, still maintain top five, or can they drop down a little bit and be more of a top 10 or a middle of the pack penalty kill and the team still finds success?
Yeah, well, to answer the second question, I mean, special teams are always important, and power play and penalty kill. I mean, no coach or player is ever going to tell you otherwise, right? But, you know, that is the million-dollar question, Drew, right? And, you know, I think the Jets' penalty kill is going to look more like, you know, the penalty kill that we saw in the second half of the season. And, you know, we talked about this quite a bit on the show. You know, a lot of, I think, the Jets' penalty-killing struggles had to do with some of the injuries. I mean, we've talked about a guy like Andrew Kopp, and then, you know, obviously, you know, Jets...
Adam Lowry.
And, I mean, these are big penalty killers. I mean, obviously, you know, a guy like Kyle Connor, you know, kills some penalties. You know, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele. I mean, the Jets have, you know, used quite a few different forwards on the penalty kill, and obviously, you know, Josh Morrissey is a guy they depend on the penalty kill, and you know Dylan DeMello, I was going to say, has really helped the penalty kill. Great defenseman. I think that it's tough to say that the Jets are going to have a top five penalty kill, but I'll tell you why they're going to need a good penalty kill, because right off the bat, you're facing a very good power play. The Flames have great special teams, and that's one thing that you know I think maybe has been overlooked a little bit. I'm not saying that the Flames have this big advantage, because I don't think the Jets have, you know, bad special teams. I think when you look at, you know, the Jets' penalty kill, you know, on the season, they're, you know, bottom 10 in the league. But as you just mentioned, a lot of that has to do with the first, you know, 40 to 50 games of the year.
Yeah,
as opposed, you know, to the next 20 or so games. So, you know, I think the Jets' penalty kill will be fine. I mean, there's no reason, you know, to think that it's going to struggle, because it's the same personnel. The Jets have no injuries. So the Jets have all their guys, all horses that they need to put out there on the penalty kill are good to go. So it's not like you're missing like an Andrew Kopp or anything like that, right, who they depend on. So, you know, again, I can't say definitively that, you know, the penalty kill is going to be 85%, Dave, or it's going to be 90%. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be as historically bad as it was, Drew. What did you say, 70%?
71.4%.
I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, closer to 85. So, you know, it's going to be important, because it doesn't matter, you know, if you're going up against the Flames or another team. I mean, if you advance to the next round, you know, who are you going to play, Colorado or St. Louis, depending on, you know, what happens with the seeding. So, you know, it's definitely going to be something that we're going to be watching, just because, as you said, it was so Jekyll and Hyde. It goes from, you know, 71 to 85. Like, that's a huge, you know, chasm there, right? So, you know, it's something that I'm sure, you know, that has been a focus at training camp. We know that the power play, I mean, was kind of the same thing. It was hot and cold. I mean, this wasn't the power play from a couple of years ago, right? I mean, Neil Pionk is a guy that I think moves the puck well, but I think, you know, he doesn't have necessarily, like, the shot like a Trouba or Buff has. And obviously, you know, Patrick Laine was not firing the puck in like we've seen before, you know, when he had 20 power play goals. So the power play, to me, actually is probably even more important, you know, than the penalty kill, because when the Jets went on that long run, guys, the power play was, you know, one of the best in the NHL.
And so often this year, Dave, I want to get you in here in a second, but so often this year, the power play for the Jets did look, in my mind, a little sluggish or maybe a little stagnant, and it's at its best, and most power plays are at their best when it's being done with precision and speed and quick movement of the puck so that the other team doesn't have time to react, Dave.
Yeah, and I think to the idea of the Jets, I think you're much more likely to see a PK resume what it was, because, I mean, again, you've got the same personnel that closed out that season, but you've also got those same personnel healthy. You've got Connor Hellebuyck, who's going to be dialed in. So to me, I mean, again, I could be wrong, but I would expect you're going to see a PK that looks remarkably similar. I would expect probably better than what we saw towards the end of that season, simply because these guys are all healthy.
Better than top five?
Well, I'm just saying better than, like, as good as what they were able to do, replicating what they were able to do at that end of the season, simply because, again, you've got the same personnel. It's not as if the PK is going to suddenly change. The system is the same system, and these guys are all healthy now. So you've got guys who are healthy, who are, you know, ready to go, who know how to play that system. I think that they're going to equal whatever it is that they were able to do. I mean, again, we might not see it to Ezzie's point right away, but, you know, provided the Jets actually are able to sustain this and play for any length of period of time, I think you'll see that. Now, of course, Calgary's got a good PP. I think it was 12th in the NHL.
Fifth best. in the NHL from January 1st until the pause. So
right.
28 games played, which admittedly is not the full sample size of the season, because over the full season they were, like 12th, you said, 12th.
Yeah.
But, you know, as when the season was beginning to wind down there, they did have a top five power play at clicking at 25.7%.
And if we're going to use that number for the Jets, we obviously have to use that
that's
team
right.
number.
You've got to compare apples to apples.
Right. So you know, that's a good point, Drew. And again, as he made that point right off the hop, this is a very good Calgary team who has some excellent weapons on the special teams. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, if you're the Jets, you obviously want to minimize the men on penalties you're taking.
Which is what they were good at doing for the most part this season.
And again, that's situational, right? Because you have, you know what you've got. You know that you don't have all of those players, so you have to be a little more concerned, make a more of a concerted effort, to minimize the risk, which is penalties. Because, of course, again, you know, special teams could be the difference in a game, and in a short series, you really can't afford to have that.
When we come back, we're going to enter the bubble. That being in Edmonton, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, give an update on what's happening there as the NHL begins to descend upon the capital of Alberta. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this bright, beautiful Saturday morning. Hope you're enjoying yourself wherever you may be. Maybe you're out at the lake. Maybe you're camping. Maybe you're in your backyard, wherever you are. If you are outside, we do strongly recommend that you hydrate today. It's very hot out. We don't want people getting sunstroke. You know, you got little ones, you got dogs. Make sure everyone's staying hydrated today. That means you, Mr. Ginsberg. I want to see you drinking a lot of water.
Yeah, I will definitely be drinking a lot of water. I've already actually filled up the kiddie pool at home.
Interesting. Is that for you or for the kids?
That's for me.
That's for you, just to sit in there while you're eating raw hot dogs like Homer, right?
Is that?
Well, I've got my Twizzlers. I've got my my water, so I'm good to go.
Is that to emulate the pond? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes.
He can't afford a full pond. I mean, you know, he doesn't have Minuk money, but to have a full water feature, but a little kiddie pond in your front yard. So if you're in River Heights, we recommend you not looking out your window as you're driving down the street later on today. Let's head out to Edmonton. Our buddy Mike McIntyre is going to join us.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The original bubble boy himself, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press, joins us on the line. Mike, are you a fan of the Moops or are you a fan of the Moors?
Great episode of Seinfeld, by the way. That's one of the best. By the way, guys, I know how Dave loves to post like fire pics on weekends in the summer. Let's hope that Ezzy doesn't follow suit and post a kiddie pool pic of himself.
I will be quickly picked up by the Winnipeg police there, Mike.
Oh, okay, good. Bubble City, right? Hub City, here we are in Edmonton. Just got in late yesterday afternoon. I took a couple days, actually, to drive out here. I stopped in Saskatoon on Thursday night, and a couple of reasons I'm driving, or I drove. I didn't want to necessarily risk going through airports these days, given what's going on in the world with COVID and whatnot. And the other reason is I have no idea, guys, how long I'm going to be out here for. Like, this could be a couple of weeks. This could be a lot longer than that. And so I thought, well, wouldn't be the worst idea to have a car and have a little bit of freedom. I mean, I am going to be mainly isolating while I'm here, basically the rink or the hotel. I don't want to risk anything, but it is nice to have the freedom, if you will, of having a car.
Now, Mike, obviously we want to talk about the Jets with you, but you know, when you enter the bubble, because the hotel for the media is not within the bubble. You do have to enter
Correct.
And then exit. So you have to, I assume, go through some sort of precautions. I assume it's similar to what you went through entering Bell MTS Iceplex for training camp. You get your temperature taken, and then they give you the go-ahead to get in there. Or is there anything more strenuous than sort of what has become second nature to us now in these unprecedented times?
Yeah, it is going to be slightly more involved, guys. I actually had to download an app yesterday. They have a company here that they've set up kiosks, I guess, in the rinks or outside the rinks. I'm not sure. I haven't been down there yet to see it, but it's going to be some kind of kiosk that you go into that does your temperature, and then there's a kind of like we had to do at Iceplex with symptoms and whatnot, but it's all app-based and was actually quite a process just to get registered. You know, you had to like give a copy of government photo ID and all kinds of things. So I'm all set up for that. And I guess once we go down now for the first time, which I guess will be Wednesday in my case, because that's when the Jets will be playing their exhibition game against Vancouver. You have to use the app, I guess, to fill this out. I'm not sure, guys, how the press box setup is going to be. We've been told to expect bare bones, not the usual. That probably means there's no candy out, I suspect.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it's going to be quite different, I think, than what we're used to. And, of course, the interviews that we're going to do with players are still going to be done virtually, even though we'll be in the same building as them. We still are not going face-to-face. And you're right. I mean, I'm not in the, I guess, initial bubble per se here, because not in the team hotel, because they are keeping that extremely tight, right? I mean, once you're in there, you're kind of not getting out. We don't have quite the same restrictions. We're, of course, being encouraged. One of the regulations says we should not go anywhere, any kind of gathering of 10 or more people. We're encouraged to wear masks everywhere. We have to wear masks at the rink the whole time. So, you know, obviously you don't want to develop any kind of symptoms, because that would derail the whole thing from a journalistic point of view of trying to cover it. So, you know, I'm going to be very, very careful. But, yeah, I'm anxious to see exactly what the setup looks like. But I can tell you that they're not allowing a whole lot of media in. Like, they were pretty restrictive and pretty selective as to the numbers. So I'm expecting that there's not going to be a whole lot of us covering each game. There should be lots of room available in a 20 or 19,000 seat arena to spread out, I would think.
Yeah, you'd think that each beat reporter would have their own section, right, Mike?
Yeah, maybe a luxury suite. I'm probably asking for too much there. Actually, yeah. A joke about this.
You can take in as his kiddie pool with you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I believe, guys, they're actually going to use some of the suites at Rogers Place and turn them. They're going to give each team, and I guess that would involve like the general manager and things like that. And I mean, they're going to turn them into sort of each team, I guess, gets an individual suite to use for their choosing. Don't forget, the Jets have to make some hard decisions as well, which I suspect have now been made since they're traveling tomorrow. Their traveling party can't be bigger than 51. And I suspect, guys, that some tough decisions probably had to be made as to who gets left behind. I mean, we suspect they're going to have to cut a couple players, right? They have 33 at camp, yeah. And they can only bring 31. So a couple players are not going to come into the bubble. But there also may be some staff. I mean, obviously the coaches are coming, but they would have had to make some hard decisions as to who is included in that 51. And it's interesting. I mean, we don't know the answer yet. Is Kevin Cheveldayoff in? I suspect he would be. He told us a couple weeks ago that they hadn't figured that out yet. What about the owner? What about Mark Chipman? I've already seen some NHL owners say they will not be going into that bubble. They're not among the 51. And it was interesting. I was on an NHL Zoom call yesterday with Gary Bettman and a bunch of other key figures in all this. Gary Bettman is not in the bubble initially anyways. He hasn't even been cleared to come to Canada and not have to go through the 14-day quarantine. So for now, he won't be entering either of the hub cities, which is kind of interesting.
If the NHL commissioner can't get into the bubble, Mike, that's an airtight bubble, right?
Yeah, so, no kidding.
You know, I've got the Dead Trees edition of the Winnipeg Free Press here in front of me, and, you know, you've got a great two-page article here, you know, and you call it, you know, the most surreal Stanley Cup playoffs ever. And you on one of the topics you cover on is, you know, the players that opted out, and you mentioned that, you know, only six players opted out, and obviously Travis Hamonic, you know, being from Manitoba, he's the one that, you know, sticks out to at least, you know, folks around these parts. But were you surprised that there weren't more players, you know, that opted out? And, you know, just on that same topic, you know, what was kind of your reaction, you know, earlier this week when Anthony Boteto, you know, came out and, you know, he admitted that he tested positive for COVID-19 and basically spent the entire month of July in quarantine?
Yeah, that was not a memorable July for Anthony Boteto, that's for sure. And no wonder he was so excited to get back on the ice. That must have felt like getting sprung from prison. I guess I was a little surprised, guys, that there was only six. And I just say that because when you look at the vote that was held by the NHLPA on ratifying all of this, like it passed overwhelmingly, but there was still like 21% that voted against it. Over 100 players said no to all this in terms of the various protocols, which of course included the CBA extension. So when I saw that over 100 players had voted no, you're thinking, well, maybe a lot of them are going to bail on this then. And so the fact that only six did, that tells me, guys, that there's a lot of guys that are kind of holding their nose in all this, who aren't exactly thrilled about how this is playing out. But at the end of the day, they're going to go to battle for their team and their teammates, which I guess is kind of the hockey way of doing it, right? Like that's usually the hockey mentality. You know, whether you love it or not, there is kind of that all for one, one for all. So, I don't imagine every guy's very thrilled about this, but I think it was explained to them, like, look, this is probably the best that we can get, and it's in our best interest long term to go ahead with this, right? Because if unless you have that security of a long term contract, if you need another deal in the next few years, there's a lot at stake here to get this season done. And I suppose, guys, even if you do have a long-term contract, who's to say what that's going to look like? I mean, you just have to look at Major League Baseball, right? And playing a shortened season and all the revenue being lost there and what that's done to already existing contracts. So, you know, in that sense, yeah, I'm a little surprised that there weren't more than just a half dozen who said no. But I guess knowing hockey players, it probably shouldn't completely shock us.
You know, Mike, you touched on it a little bit in your answer to Drew, but the Jets obviously are at 33 right now. They're going to have to decrease that number to 31 for players, anyways, when they head to Edmonton. I'm not going to ask you to list the 31 you think will be going, but who do you think are the two that are going to be left off the list?
Well, Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine. they're going to go. No, so, I mean, I guess it's a question of do you want to bring 17 forwards and 11 D, or do you want to bring 18 forwards and 10 D, or I guess 16 and 12? I don't think they're going to bring 12 defensemen. So I think Logan Stanley is probably one that is not coming to the bubble, especially if Anthony Boteto is fully back. I mean, he's got to obviously get skating a little bit here, and so they're, you know, he's not going into the starting lineup anyways. Anthony Boteto was going to be one of the extras. I would just suggest his place on the depth chart has probably fallen, given that he spent the whole month basically in quarantine. So instead of the 8 or 9 guy, maybe he's the 9 or 10 guy now. But so I would think Logan Stanley's probably one. Nelson Noje might be the other if they go with 10 defensemen. In fact, Nelson Noje would be the other if they go with 10 defensemen. If they bring 11, though, then you're looking at a forward. And then I guess to me, I mean, you're looking at probably one of TJ Cease or David Gustafson as the one that doesn't come, just because of who all the other guys are. I mean, there's some, you know, you're not leaving Gabriel Bourque. I don't think you're leaving Logan Shaw behind. You know, Mark Letestu, given all that he's done to just work his way back, I mean, he's coming. So it would be interesting if they have to choose, say, between Cease and Gustafson. And I don't know. I mean, I'd probably say Gustafson is the guy that comes and Cease is the guy that doesn't. No offense to CJ Cease at all, but Gustafson's obviously a rookie who they have big plans for. Not that Cease isn't necessarily in their plans, but he's a bit of an older guy. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to be Logan Stanley and then one of CJ Cease and Nelson Noje. Again, assuming everybody else is healthy and nobody gets left behind due to any other circumstance. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean,
I'd go with you, Mike. My inclination was to think that it would be Noje and Stanley, mostly because Stanley obviously missed a lot of the they missed a lot of the camp. And Nogé, to your point, whether they bring that extra defenseman, he'd be probably get left off. And, yeah, I would think it would be Cease as well. That would be my inclination.
Yeah, I would tend to lean to bringing that 11th defenseman, given how many defensive injuries the Jets had this year. I would err on the side of caution there. I mean, you know, I can't imagine the kind of scenario where the Jets would have to go that deep into their forward group. But you never, and not that you would expect them to necessarily have to go 11 defensemen deep in their you know, when it comes to their blue line. But stranger things have happened, and we've seen them this year with the Jets defense.
You know, guys, you hear the saying that teams often say you need. I think 10 defensemen is kind of the common thing to to win the Stanley Cup. You need 10 NHL defensemen. I don't know that I've ever heard the saying that says you need 18 NHL forwards to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So you're right. I'd bring the extra. I mean, these are the most unique circumstances. Guys haven't played in 4 months. They're only getting one exhibition game to ramp up. Like, there could be injuries that you don't expect, you know, just groin pulls or whatever. I definitely want an extra defenseman than another extra forward. You already got a whole bunch of them. So I'd go 17 and 11, but I guess we'll see. That, by the way, the Jets already know the answer to this. They had to submit their roster yesterday. Bill Daly confirmed this when we were on the call. The NHL will release all the rosters, I believe, tomorrow. I'm not sure if the Jets, at their skate this morning, if they're going to tell us who the two that they are not bringing are, or if we'll just have to wait till the NHL releases. I guess we'll find out shortly.
Yes, we will. Mike McIntyre joining us of the Winnipeg Free Press, of course, joining us from Edmonton, where he's starting his bubble procedure ahead of the return to play next week. Mike, before we let you go, one last question. Obviously, the Jets have that exhibition game on Wednesday night against the Vancouver Canucks, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. If you're the Jets coaching staff, if you're the Jets players, if you're the Jets management, are you just basically holding your breath and trying to get through that game more than anything else?
You absolutely are. And, of course, the same goes for, you know, Jim Benning and Vancouver's and Travis Green and every other team that's having one of these. I mean, I'm really curious to see, are we going to see guys blocking shots? I assume so, because the idea, if they just wanted to sort of replicate a game, they would have just had more scrimmages, right? So the mindset of this, in talking to Paul Maurice, is they want a real game, even though that brings real risk. And, everybody will be holding their breath because can you just imagine 4 months away, you've now come back in these most unique circumstances. You're working your way back to, as we said, the most unique playoff in NHL history. And late in the third period of a nothing game, you block a shot and break your foot or something. Like, my goodness. Nobody wants to see that on any team for any player. So, yeah, hold your breath a bit, and I am curious to see what it all looks like. Of course, it sounds like the NHL is going to delay kind of unveiling all the bells and whistles for the television production and the in-arena production until next Saturday when the playoffs actually get going. But it'll be interesting to at least get a bit of a taste of what this is all going to look and sound and feel like.
Well, we've had you on 5 second delay this entire time so that you don't curse up a blue streak. I know how you tend to let the expletives fly when you're talking with us, Mike.
Well, especially when they run out of candy up in the press box.
Well, we're it was Ezzy's birthday yesterday, so we're well stocked here. We got licorice, we got wine gums,
Mike,
we got
just,
cookies.
You know, let us know if you need us to send, you know, an illegal curve sandwich from Bernstein's or, you know, a genie's cake or whatever. Anything you need from Winnipeg, pierogies, we'll make sure we ship it out to you.
That would be great, especially guys, because as I said, the press box is going to be pretty bare bones. I might have to set up my own little mini buffet up there.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. You can read his entire coverage, of course, as he is live in Edmonton for the return to play of the Winnipeg Jets. Mike, I appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. Be safe in Edmonton, buddy.
You bet. Enjoy the weekend, guys.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we talk about the unveiling of the Seattle team's nickname. I get the boys' thoughts if they like.
Oh, did they release the name?
As his sarcasm is too much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And now, for our fans and for all of you, the wait is finally over. So what do you say we get it on?
We are proud to give you the Seattle Kraken.
The Kraken of Seattle, the 32nd NHL team to join the league starting next year or the year after next. I'm so confused, I can't even keep track anymore. I guess it's the year after next right now. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, do you guys like the nickname? They went with Kraken. People sort of, I think when people first started saying it, they thought it was going to be tongue-in-cheek and they would never go with it, but it proved to be the eventual winner. Do you like it, or is it a little too cutesy for you?
No, I like it, and it's different, right? And I always like when a team nickname, you know, doesn't end with an S, first of all, because the most of them do. But, I mean, you knew it was going to be, you know, a sea kind of nautical theme, right? Like, it was really Sockeyes or, you know, what was the other one? Seamen, or there were a few other names that
I think... No way they were going with Seamen.
Yeah, I don't think they were going with that one. As well, I don't know. I never even heard that one suggested.
I actually never heard that suggested.
It was, you know, it was like salmon or, you know, the alliteration with the S, right?
So yeah. I personally was I liked Seattle Sound the best. I thought that made
it. But the Sounders, isn't that the soccer team?
Well, I don't know.
The Seattle Sounders? I think that's their soccer team.
It could be. I mean, maybe that is, and maybe that's as a it result is. Disqualifies it. But yeah. I thought that one worked.
I love the name.
Or they should have just gone Sounders and added an extra S at the end.
Sounders.
No, but yeah, the Seattle Sounders FC is a major league team, Drew, so that was a terrible idea.
Sorry.
But
hey, at least I knew that.
I mean, like, the jerseys look awesome. Mm. They look really good, and you know the colors look good, and you know the video and all of the production, the way they you know put it all together, you know with having all of the construction workers, you know at the new Seattle arena site, like I thought everything was just done really well, and it's kind of funny that you know the announcement came on the opening day of baseball as well, right? So yeah, I mean the name's great, Drew, and you know again I think you know I always find it funny. You know, how emotional and, you know, I guess aggressive people get towards nicknames, right? Like, you remember back in the day, you know, it was kind of the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim was mocked. Mm-hmm. I always loved it. I mean, obviously, you know, we were kids, you know, when the Mighty Ducks entered the league. But anytime there's a team nickname, you know, it's so heavily criticized. I mean, even, you know, 3 years ago or 4 years ago when, you know, Vegas came out with the Golden Knights, right? Like, there were some people that loved it, some people hated it. It seems like the majority of people, you know, like the Kraken. And at the end of the day, it's really more so about, you know, what people in Seattle wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like they wanted the name Kraken. And, you know, like I said, the jersey looks awesome. I mean, having a team in Seattle is just going to be super cool. I mean, that arena is probably going to be, you know, if not the nicest arena in the NHL, it's going to be the newest and one of the nicest. So, yeah, I mean, it's just great for hockey, and I just like the way they kind of rolled it out. And they can obviously, you know, when the team starts playing, you know, they've just got a built-in, you know, release the Kraken that they can do. And
Liam Neeson's on order.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder if it's going to age well. That's my only concern about it.
I think it's fine. I think the reality is that the initial buzz is obviously huge. I think it was the number one selling paraphernalia on one of those jersey company Fanatics, I think it was.
Sure.
And so, you know, obviously, I think I saw someone say that it already had more hype in the first 24 hours than the Golden Knights did in terms of sales and that sort of thing. So obviously it's getting a good response and people are into it. And look, I think they did a good job. I think I like the way they promoted it, you know, yeah, to Ezzy's idea with the boat and that sort of thing with the score, the goal light. And I like it. I think the jerseys are really good. I think the colors are a little different and I like the logo and I like the fact that they put the Seattle needle in there and stuff like that on the secondary in the anchor. So I think it was really smart. And to Ezzy's point, people get really invested in jerseys and you know, Ice the Addicts is a really good kind of jersey. They usually
know in advance. They get leaks and stuff, so they usually have a pretty good idea. And you should see the buzz that their posts create when, you know, we saw it with the Jets when they had the Heritage Classic uniforms against the Flames for this past season. And again, we saw it with the Kraken that people were, you know, but I love it. I think it's time to get Krakalakin.
Another name that people.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
The whole segment.
Okay. Snoop Dogg is going to like that one if he's listening, which he does every once in a while, by the way.
Right.
But another name, the Toronto Raptors. When the Raptors name came out and, you know, they came out with the dinosaurs, people were like, some people were like, what is this? Does anybody not love that name now?
I mean, I'm sure some people do.
It's a great name. Nobody ever talks about, oh, you know, the Raptors. Like, now it's the Raptors. They've been around for, what, 20 years now? More than 20 years? I think it's a great name, and it's different, right? Like, obviously the Raptors there are no Raptors in Toronto, right? And there are no Kraken in Seattle. It's a mythical creature, right? So.
Wait a minute. It's a mythical creature? It's not real? Well, now I don't have anything to believe in anymore. When we come back, Anthony LaPanta, Minnesota Wild broadcaster, is going to join us. Talk about the Wild ahead of their playoff series with the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.